And we move now to the Nation and World page, an article from the Associated Press written by Eric Tucker, Leah Skeen, and Sarah Brumfield. Title of the piece is Ship Had Electrical Issues, Dateline Baltimore. The massive container ship that caused the deadly collapse of the Baltimore Bridge experienced apparent electrical issues before it left port, but set out anyway. Someone with knowledge of the situation told the Associated Press on Monday, hours after the FBI said it was investigating whether any laws might have been broken. The Dally left Baltimore's port on early on March 26, laden with cargo destined for Sri Lanka, when it struck one of the Francis Scott Key Bridge's supports, causing the span to collapse into the Patapsco River and sending six members of a roadwork crew plummeting to their deaths. Two of the victims are still unaccounted for. Authorities announced Monday evening the recovery of a fourth body from a construction vehicle in the underwater wreckage. The person's identity wasn't released per their family's request, officials said. The Dally experienced apparent electrical issues before leaving port, according to someone with knowledge of the situation. The person, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said alarms went off on the ship's refrigerated containers while it was still docked in Baltimore, likely indicating an inconsistent power supply. The ship's crew was aware of the issues and indicated they would be addressed, according to the person. Officials with the National Transportation Safety Board said their investigation will include an inquiry into whether the ship experienced power issues before starting its voyage. Board Chair Jennifer Homedy said last week that the investigation is focused on the ship's electrical system generally. The ship experienced power issues moments before the crash, as is evident in videos that show its lights going out and coming back on. Homedy said information gleaned from the vessel's voyage data recorder is relatively basic, so that information in the engine room will help us tremendously. The FBI said Monday it opened a criminal investigation into the bridge collapse that is focused on the circumstances leading up to it and whether all federal laws were followed, according to a different person familiar with the matter. The person spoke to the AP on the condition of anonymity. FBI agents were aboard the cargo ship on Monday conducting court-authorized law enforcement activity, the agency said in a statement. The Dally is managed by Synergy Marine Group and owned by Grace Ocean Private Ltd., both of Singapore. And that was an article from the Associated Press. Ship had electrical issues. Lindsay?
Official says Israel will respond. Biden meets with Iraqi leader while trying to quell regional tensions. This article is from the Associated Press by Joseph Fetterman, Dateline Jerusalem. Israel's military chief said Monday his country will respond to Iran's weekend attack, but he did not elaborate on when and how, as world leaders urged against retaliation, trying to avoid a spiral of violence in the region. The Iranian attack on Saturday came in response to a suspected Israeli strike 2 weeks earlier on an Iranian consular building in the Syrian capital of Damascus that killed two Iranian generals. It is the first time Iran launched a direct military assault on Israel, despite decades of enmity dating back to the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Iran launched hundreds of drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles at Israel in the attack. The Israeli military said 99% of the drones and missiles were intercepted by Israel's own air defenses and warplanes, and in coordination with the U.S.-led coalition of partners. Israeli military chief Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi said Monday that Israel is considering its next steps, but that the Iranian strike will be met with a response. Halevi gave no details. The Army spokesman, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, said Israel will respond at the time that we choose. Both men spoke at the Nevatim Air Base in southern Israel, which Hagari said suffered only light damage in the Iranian attack. While Israeli leaders have hinted at retaliation, the government is under heavy international pressure not to further escalate the conflict, especially after the Iranian strike caused such little damage. The U.S. has urged Israel to show restraint as it seeks to build a broad diplomatic response. While Major General Pat Ryder, Pentagon press secretary, said any response is up to Israel to decide, he added, "We don't want to see escalation, but we obviously will take necessary measures to protect our forces in the region." Meanwhile, President Joe Biden hailed the unprecedented military effort to defend Israel Monday as he hosted Iraq's leaders at the White House, and his administration aims to prevent an escalation in Mideast hostilities. Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani visited the White House for a meeting intended to focus on U.S.-Iraq relations, which was scheduled well before the Iranian strikes. But Saturday's drone and missile launches underscored the delicate relationship between Washington and Baghdad. That article was from the Associated Press by Joseph Fetterman. Officials say Israel will respond.
And there are two small articles on the bottom of the Nation of World page. I'll read both for you. They're both from the Associated Press. The first one, court lets state prohibit gender-affirming care. Dateline Washington. The Supreme Court on Monday allowed Idaho to enforce its ban on gender-affirming care for transgender youth, while lawsuits over the law proceed, reversing lower courts. The justice's order allows the state to put in place a 2003 law that subjects physicians to up to 10 years in prison if they provide hormones, puberty blockers, and other gender-affirming care to people under age 18. Under the court's order, the two transgender teens who sued to challenge the law still will be able to obtain care. The court's three liberal justices would have kept the law on hold. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote that it would have been better to let the case proceed unfettered by our intervention. Justice Neil Gorsuch of the conservative majority wrote that it is a welcome development that the court is reining in on an overly broad lower court order. Gender-affirming care for youth is supported by every major medical association, according to the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American Psychiatric Association. And that was an article entitled Court Lets State Prohibit Gender-Affirming Care from the Associated Press. The other article is entitled Israel Tells Palestinians Not to Return to Homes. Dateline Deir al-Balah, the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military renewed warnings on Monday for Palestinians not to return to northern Gaza, a day after witnesses and medical officials said Israeli troops opened fire and killed five people among throngs of displaced residents trying to walk back to their homes in the devastated area. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were driven from the north after Israeli forces launched their offensive there in response to Hamas militants' October 7 attack on southern Israel. In the months of fighting, since vast parts of the north have been flattened, including much of Gaza City. After months of Israeli restrictions on aid to the north, some 300,000 who remained there on the brink of a famine, according to the United Nations. Still, many Palestinians want to go back, saying they are sick of the conditions they are enduring in displacement. For months, families have been crammed into tent camps, schools turned shelters, and homes of relatives throughout the southern Gaza Strip. Some also fear remaining in Rafah, Gaza's southernmost town, as Israel says it plans to attack there. And that was an article from the Associated Press. Israel tells Palestinians not to return to homes. Lindsay?
A Father's Journey from Bigot to Ally by Heather Hollingsworth of the Associated Press. Dateline, Smithville, Missouri. Before his transgender daughter was suspended after using the girls' bathroom at her Missouri high school, before the bullying and the suicide attempts, before she dropped out, before all that, Dusty Farr was, in his own words, a full-on bigot, by which he meant that he was eager to steer clear of anyone LGBTQ+. Now, though, after everything, he says he wouldn't much care if his 16-year-old daughter, and he proudly calls her that, told him she was an alien, because she is alive. When it was my child, it just flipped a switch. And it was like a wake-up, says Farr, who is suing the Platte County School District on Kansas City's outskirts. Looking back, Farr figures his daughter, the youngest of five, started feeling out of place in her own body when she was just 6 or 7. But he didn't see it, even as they fished and camped together. Then, when she was 12, she started to steer away from him, spending more time with the rest of the family. It lasted for a few months before she came out. He now knows how hard this was. Growing up, he says, my kids knew how I felt. His wife, whom he described as less sheltered, was on board immediately. Him, not so much. Given the way I was raised, a conservative fire and brimstone Baptist, LGBTQ is a sin. You're going to hell. And these were things, unfortunately, that I said to my daughter, Farr said. I'm kind of ashamed to say that. They bumped heads, their relationship strained. In desperation, he turned to God, then it hit him. She's a girl. His daughter, who was named only by her initials of RF in the lawsuit, was stunned. He had been, she recalled, to say it nicely, very annoying. Now everything was different. There was this electricity in me that was just, it felt like pure joy, she recalled, as she played with her dog at a park in February. Her father was with her. She, her father, and her attorneys asked that she remain anonymous because she is unnamed in the lawsuit and to protect her from discrimination. She was diagnosed with gender dysphoria or distress caused when gender identity doesn't match a person's assigned sex. She grew out her hair and began taking drugs to delay puberty, a common treatment. Farr says things returned to normal for the most part, but then came high school. And Farr said anything I did to her, school was 10 times worse. The 2021-2022 school year had just started when the assistant principal pulled his daughter aside. According to the suit filed last year, the administrator said students must use the restroom if they're sex designated at birth or a single gender neutral bathroom. The district disputes that happened. Another employee, the suit said, took it further and told her that using the girls' bathroom was against the law. The district disputed that happened, too. The thing is, there isn't a law, at least not in Missouri. While more than 10 states have enacted laws over bathroom use, Missouri is not one of them. What Missouri has done is impose a ban on gender-affirming care. For bathrooms, it leaves policy debate to local districts. Asinine is how Farr described the whole wave of restrictions, while acknowledging in the same breath that he probably would have supported them a decade ago. Kind of makes me dislike myself a little bit. He figured it was all just a way to intimidate her. His daughter didn't understand. It just kind of made me feel hopeless in my education, she recalls thinking. The gender-neutral bathroom was far from her classes and often had long lines, the suit says. She, as a freshman, was missing class, and teachers were lecturing her. So she used the girls' restroom. Verbal reprimands were followed by a one-day in-school suspension and then a two-day out-of-school suspension, the suit says. Your policy is dumb, Farr recalled telling the school, which argued in its response to his lawsuit that his daughter was eating lunch in the girls' restroom. His daughter started using the boys' restroom. One day, a classmate approached and told another student, maybe I should rape her, the suit said. Beyond angry now, Farr called not just the student but the ACLU. The district acknowledged the incident, saying a student made a highly inappropriate comment about rape and was disciplined. By now, Farr's daughter was afraid to go to school. The district sees it differently, writing in a court filing that there were numerous factors and circumstances in RF's life unrelated to school, which may have caused emotional harm, depression, and anxiety. Ultimately, her parents got the school to agree to let her finish her freshman year online, but she missed 3 weeks of classes before the switch was approved. Typically an A and B student, she plummeted to D's and F's. Worse to Farr, his daughter was withdrawing. He describes it as a dark rabbit hole of depression. Twice she tried to kill herself and was hospitalized. Everything from butter knives to headache medicine was locked up. She returned in person to start her sophomore year, hoping things would be better. She made it only a few weeks before returning to online school. At semester's end, Farr and his family moved out of the district. Bathroom access remained a source of friction in her new school, so again she switched to online school. When she turned 16 last spring, Farr and his wife agreed to let her drop out. She's in counseling now, taking hormone replacement therapy and considering an alternative high school completion program. She'd like to go to college one day and study psychology, maybe law. Sometimes Farr's daughter yells at him, and he admits he missed the teen attitude. that spirit and spite had faded. Being a teenager is hell, he says. Being a trans teen is 10 kinds of hell. She's the brave one. I'm just her voice. He feels he has changed enough to fill this role, that being her voice can help other parents and kids avoid what his family endured. He thinks that because of where he came from, maybe people will listen when he raises alarms. Maybe. It's almost like a transgender person, he says, of his transformation. There's the dead me, and then there's the new me. That article was from the Associated Press by Heather Hollingsworth, A Father's Journey from Bigot to Ally.
And on page 812 is another article from the Associated Press. No end in sight. Clouds of parachutes ease the descent of boxes of food towards the landscape of shattered houses in Gaza, watched by Palestinians facing famine. In Tel Aviv, Israeli protesters stand against a police water cannon as they urge the government to make a deal for the release of hostages held by Hamas. Associated Press photographers have captured what 6 months of devastating war have brought to Israel for Palestinians. In Gaza, Israel's siege, bombardment, and offensive have created what UN and aid officials call a man-made crisis of near starvation. Several hundred thousand Palestinians in northern Gaza face imminent famine, with little aid able to reach them, the UN says. In Gaza, southernmost city, a crowd of children and men thrust their pots and bowls out for meals being distributed by an aid group. An impromptu tent city has blanketed the edges of Rafah, filled with hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who fled Israel's offensive in other parts of Gaza. The influx has swelled Rafah to some 1.4 million people, about five times the normal population. Meanwhile, each day brings more death as strikes topple buildings with families inside. 6 months of war have killed more than 33,000 Palestinians, according to Gaza Health Ministry. One photo, a girl looks on in shock as a man carries a child out of the rubble of a building in the southern city of Khan Yunis, which was the focus of Israel's ground offensive for months. With entire blocks now in ruins, parts of Khan Yunis are starting to resemble Gaza City in the north, where some estimates say about 70% of the buildings have been destroyed or damaged. In Israel, the public is still gripping by grief and anger over the images from Hamas's October 7 attack, which triggered the war. Storming out of Gaza, the militants rampaged in southern Israeli towns, leaving streets strewn with bodies and entire families killed in their homes. They killed about 1,200 people, most of them civilians, and abducted around 250 others. After a round of releases during a November ceasefire, Hamas still holds an estimated 100 hostages, along with the bodies of around 30 others. But divisions have begun to open among Israelis as some relatives of hostages demand Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reach a ceasefire deal to win the release of those still in captivity. At the same time, Israel's international isolation has grown amid criticism of the offensive. At its six-month mark, it is not clear what direction the war will now take. Weeks of mediation by the U.S., Egypt, and Qatar for a longer ceasefire have so far been unable to make a breakthrough. But international pressure is growing for a halt to the war. Israel has said it is determined to expand its offensive to Rafah, vowing to uproot Hamas from what it says is its last stronghold. That has raised alarm over a possible dramatic increase in casualties and an escalation in the conflict. And that was an article from the Associated Press. Conflict marks a grim six-month milestone amid mounting devastation, from the Associated Press. And with that, Lindsay and I will take a short break. Be back with the opinion pages and other news as time allows. So stay with us, please.